the last word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
We've had some great European championships in the past. Ireland, of course, always remembering our own part in the 1988 championships when there were only eight teams in it. What a tournament that was. It's gotten bigger over the years, up to 24 teams. Of course, we were there in 2016 benefiting from that and from the fact that in some groups, three teams qualified. But Tony Cascarino, it does strike me that is it perhaps a little bit unwieldy, and does this cheat us a little bit that you can have three teams qualifying from a group when, for example, you have the group of death, Group F, France, Germany, Portugal, all in there with Hungary, which looks sensational, and yet the big three could still all qualify. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, Matt, look, I mean, if we look at the Champions League and you see group stages, you can predict nearly every one of them. I think we've seen the sort of seeding system, if for a want of a better way of saying it, in football generally and in other sports. Yes, it gives them an advantage, Matt. I actually think England as a group is just as tough as France, Germany, and because there's obviously Hungary in there and Portugal. I think England's group is really tough as well, Matt. But they do try and give an advantage to the biggest nations to get through to the latter stages, Matt, because of the numbers. Is it unfair? I don't know.
I'm not even saying unfair, Tony. I'm just wondering, does it take a little bit of the sort of excitement out of it, in that if only two teams were qualifying from each group, if you had a slightly different formatted,
yes.
It would be more fun. But actually, as it happens, each of these three countries probably beat Hungary, and then that it might be enough to get through to the next round, but a couple of draws and they're sorted. So
yeah,
they won't get knocked out.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. That, you know, if you just have a straight two teams go through, yeah, that's fantastic. And there's going to be a big, you know, loser in it. And it could be Germany, France, or, you know, as you said, Portugal. One of them could go out. And maybe two if Hungary had an incredible tournament. I like that format, Matt. I like surprises and, you know, teams that you think are going to go well and then can suddenly find themselves travelling back. But football is designed in a different way, Matt, to try and give bigger nations a slight advantage.
I love that group, though, Mark Lawrence, because the potential for really enjoyable games in the early stages between France and Germany, France and Portugal, Germany and Portugal is enormous. Those are really games to look forward to, aren't they?
Yeah, you just wonder, Matt, don't you, whether in the first games, I think we hit France-Germany that first fixture. You're just a little bit worried. Like, make sure you don't lose. I think majority of these competitions in the group of four, generally, the first games are very, very tight because, what you mustn't do is lose a game. Then you've got all sorts of problems. I mean, this whole competition was Platini's, wasn't it? This was his Platini's baby. And all along, it's just designed for all the better teams to come through. So, really, the tournament won't kind of spark to life until it gets into the knockout stage, I think.
But funny, when you said it's Platini's tournament, I presume you mean about the expansion to 24 in his role as an administrator. But when you said Platini's tournament, I was immediately thinking of how brilliant he was as a player in 84, another eight-team tournament, and what brilliant that was to watch. That sometimes tournaments benefit from having fewer games with better quality teams.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, then the second thing we judge from all of it is it's money, because it's more games, Matt. And, you know, as much as UEFA, obviously, with the European Super League, went kind of mad about it and quite right, you look at this competition and you think, well, hold on a minute. I mean, how many games do you actually want to have? And unfortunately, like all tournaments, it comes at the end of the season. So I think the quality will be interesting to see. And I know, obviously, most of the teams and players have had a relative rest. I know they've played friendlies and stuff. But don't expect this tournament to really set a light until, I would say, something maybe like the last eight of the competition.
Miguel Delaney, it's 3 years now since France won the World Cup. But could it be that France are even a better team now than they were 3 years ago and are favourites to win this tournament?
You'd think so, yeah. I suppose there's the confidence you get from winning a trophy like that, as we saw from Spain in the transformation between 2008 and 2010, a decade ago. And also, they've solved one issue in the team, at least in terms of how they play, by bringing in Benzema. Because for all of France's talent, they maybe missed that little bit of creativity or link between midfield and attack, and Benzema offers that, although the offset is the chemistry in the team. I think they are favourites for a reason. It's not just about strength and depth. It's also maybe the fact they've got the least gaps in the squad. I mean, England, you could argue, are almost close to France in terms of kind of attacking quality, but England have that weakness in central defence that the French don't. So yeah, I'd say they're justifiable favourites. But I think, as the lads have alluded to there, I think this tournament we could have a lot of surprises in it. Because first of all, it comes in the back of the most intense club calendar we've ever seen. There's been the shortest gap between a Champions League final and a tournament starting 13 days in this millennium. And like, the ingredients are kind of in place for a bit like 2002, when all the big teams went in undercooked from the expanded Champions League. They were all fatigued and we saw so many surprises. I think there's potential for that this time.
Okay, let's talk a bit more about France, though. Tony Cascarino, of course, you have plenty of experience of playing in French football yourself and watch a lot of French football. Do you expect this team to be as good as in the World Cup? And how important is it for the likes of Paul Pogba that he has players like N'Golo Kanté alongside him, perhaps to make him better than he is at club level?
Yeah, Matt, they're an exceptional outfit. I watched them, you know, take apart Bulgaria. And okay, Bulgaria. Yeah, but they're a side that can just switch it on as they want. Kante is massive for them alongside Tolisso, Pogba, great midfield. And then, as you mentioned, you know, Griezmann up front, you know, another player that seems to play even better for France. They're a very talented squad. I mean, Kingsley Coman, you know, Dembele at Barcelona, don't start in the team, Matt.
Well, they have Mbappe up front.
Yeah, well, Mbappe, you could go Benzema, and when Benzema doesn't play, I mean, Giroud does wonders for France. You know, he plays really, really well. I think they've just got so much of a luxury, Matt, of players, especially in forward areas. I think one chance is I've never been convinced by Lloris, he's achieved a lot in the French national team. I still think he's a goalkeeper you can put pressure on, but they don't tend to get too much pressure on them. Kanté is huge for France. If he plays well and everything in front of him ticks, I think France are going to be really difficult to beat.
But what about Portugal then, Mark, who still have Cristiano Ronaldo, although maybe his powers are waning at the age of 36 and he contributes very little defensively, so other players around him have to do a lot of running. But there's an awful lot of very good Portuguese players now, aren't they, across the major leagues in Europe?
Well, yeah, and Fernandes. So I would, all what we would recognise as the big teams, Matt, if each and every one of those has a goal scorer, out and out goal scorer, they've all got a chance of winning the competition. Portugal fit into that category. I think England fit into that category with Kane as well. And it's such a massive thing. And it doesn't matter about Ronaldo not having to chase back. I mean, you wouldn't want him chasing anybody. You just get the ball up to him enough times in decent areas and he'll score for you, or at least he will create something or get penalties and free kicks. So I do believe that all the top teams with big, shall we say, goal scorers have got a chance of going very far in this competition.
Of course, Miguel, Portugal are the defending champions as well, but could Cristiano Ronaldo accommodating him become something that is not a positive for them anymore?
I mean, that's been the issue at Juventus, where there's been a lot of talk about how they're trying to evolve to a new style. But because Ronaldo, at this age, despite his obvious qualities, he requires a team to be played in the centre in a specific way, it can make them somewhat predictable. Now, the offset is that if you get the ball to him, he'll do something spectacular with it. But I suppose the issue is then cutting it out. So there is a little bit of not quite a problem for Portugal, but something they have to sort out, and it maybe prevents the team, which has abundant attacking talent, and is really strong in itself, from maybe doing something different and kind of moving on to the next level. But broadly speaking, I would actually say they're much better than 2016. But again, they're in that group of death, and it's a group of death that's skewed, because even though you say France and Portugal are actually probably the strongest in that group, Germany have suddenly had a little bit of a revival, and crucially, all three of their games are at home. On the other side, Hungary have two home games, and we saw the effect of crowds returning in the Premier League at the end of the season, particularly, say, with Villa at home to Chelsea. So it could really distort things.
Yeah, but Hungary aren't that good, are they? They struggled against Ireland the other night, and they don't particularly have the nicest crowd either, do they?
But that's the kind of thing. I mean, obviously the crowd, I mean, there's huge questions there, but at the same time, it's, I mean, without to find a point in it. It's that kind of nationalist fervor that even if a team isn't good, we have seen the effects in these sort of games. And especially when it's, you know, the first tournament game you've ever hosted, it could be maybe for one game only. It will just kind of amplify a team's performance and make it awkward for a big team, if they, especially if they're having an off day or, as we've discussed, might be fatigued from the club season just gone.
Okay, what about Germany? Just stay with you, Miguel, to start. I mean, are there signs that Joachim Löw, in his last tournament, after having tremendous success, World Cup winner in 2014, that by recalling Thomas Müller in particular, is going to get the team gelled again to make them real contenders?
Well, there was a little bit of aspect of desperation about that, wasn't there? Suddenly calling all the players they discarded before 2018, and then they obviously completely crashed in 2018. Love's been an interesting one for some time, because there has been actually been that ongoing argument that maybe under him, Germany, given their abundant talent, underperformed. They've only had one trophy in a decade, even if it was the World Cup. And they looked really stale for the last few years. They got hammered 6-0 by Spain in November. Only suddenly, in the last few weeks, and you know, maybe it's the effect of Löw realizing it's his last chance, maybe it's the team coming together, but in their last two performances, they've suddenly looked like they've had a kind of spark of electricity again, and they were brilliant against Poland the other night.
Mark, I know it's an old cliche, but you could never write off the Germans, can you?
No, Matt. You know that they'll be well drilled. And he says I've looked at the majority of these players for a long, long time, so we know how they operate. But I'm just looking at the Germans, and I'm not convinced where the goals are going to come from. And I know, as Miguel has said, that they've been picked up of late. I don't think it's that easy with them, and I think when push comes to shove, I just think they will be short of goals. We know they've got quality, but I don't see them being a real threat.
I'm deliberately saving England for a little bit later, so let's go through some of the other major contenders. Tony, what about Belgium? Because Belgium, who of course lost the semi-final in the World Cup to France, beat England in the third and fourth place playoff, have a number one team ranked in the world for a number of years now. And what they say, a golden generation of players who are all now tipping 30. Kevin De Bruyne, having received the injury in the Champions League final. They're in a group with Denmark, Finland and Russia. What do you expect out of Belgium?
Well, as Mark touched on, having a centre-forward and get goals, they've got Lukaku, so that's a big plus for them. They are the golden generation. They've got quite an ageing defence. Matt, you look at them in Vertonghen and Alderweireld. I'm just not quite sure of Van Marlen as well. You know, they're all on the wrong side of 30, Matt. Look, they've got goals. You can't deny that there's a lot of good players for Belgium. Hazard's disastrous period at Real Madrid, as you know, his brother might even play in before him, Matt. I think Tielemans is important to them. I think the way he plays, De Bruyne, obviously, we know. I'm just not quite sure, Matt, if they can turn it on as regular. And I don't think they're as good without the ball. I mean, when they played Brazil in 2018 in the World Cup, Matt, they worked their socks off. Eden Hazard was unbelievable in the night. He chased everything. But they only do it now and again. I don't think they do that regularly enough. And I wouldn't be surprised if Belgium, flat to deceive, look a great side, might get through the group stage comfortably. But when they come against a very savvy team who stops them, I think Belgium will fall flat on their face, Matt.
Miguel, you've already mentioned Spain's 6-0 victory over Germany, but yet there doesn't seem to be an enormous amount of confidence in Spain. And the failure of any Real Madrid players to be in the squad is notable, but they've also had major issues with COVID in recent days. So what do you give for Spain's chances?
Not that strong, but I think maybe they've got a lot of good talent coming through. But the fact they're not at Real Madrid or Barcelona maybe illustrates that it's that bit too early for them. Although one of them is at Barcelona and could well be the breakout star of the tournament. Pedri in midfield, he's talked of as a new Iniesta. I think they are a good team, but maybe don't have enough prime or top quality at the moment to win it without a good degree of luck. I think they're capable of being brilliant in any one match, but and Luis Enrique has been obsessed with changing the style of Spain, because it was seen as a bit dated and a bit passive. He wants to add a bit more electricity to it. So they are capable of being good in any one match, but you still feel that maybe that they lack maybe a bit of bite and certainly lack a goal scorer to really take them that far. But who knows? If they get a few breaks of the ball, there's at least some quality there to do something.
That point, Mark, you made earlier about goal scorers is something that as well, maybe will it restrict Italy, where it seems that, well, traditionally they've always had absolutely brilliant defenders and then other scorers to get the goals to win tournaments, that in this generation it seems to be Italy is weighed down with midfielders but don't have the goal scorers and don't have the and their defenders are ageing. Mark?
Oh, sorry, Matt. I didn't shout my name. No, I absolutely agree. And I think also that they play a little bit of a different way from the Italian teams of old. I think there's more of a pressing way that they play. You know, they get into the face of the opposition. We know how good generally they've been defensively. Never give very much to the opposition. But, you know, that's a little bit the same with those. And I think they'll be fine. I think they'll come out the group. But then I do think because of the lack of real kind of star quality and match winners, again, maybe maybe semi-finals at the very, very best for them.
And then before we get to England, Scotland and Wales, one other country I want to mention, Tony, is the Netherlands, who nobody is really confident about. And it would seem that even the manager's brother is slagging him off for what he's producing.
Yes, Matt, and I watched them against Scotland in the 2-2 draw, Matt, and yes, Memphis Depay, he can, you know, he's had a great time at Lyon in France, done brilliant for them over the years. Frankie de Jong at Barcelona, Matt, another really top player. I just, a bit like Belgium and probably a poorer version of Belgium, I'm not quite sure what I'm going to get from them. Ronaldo midfield, top player, really enjoy watching him play. I'm just not quite... De Ligt has not really played as well for Juventus as most people. Centre-half, the big towering lad, and not done as well. I'm just not really convinced by Holland, Matt. I think they're a side that seem to go in and out of form, and the manager, Frank de Boer, he really has had a tough time, as you know, when he was at Crystal Palace, and maybe a national job suits him, Matt, but the best player for me is Memphis Depay, who's got a chance of getting goals from set pieces and open play. But after that, Matt, I'm scratching my head to find a really good goal scorer for Holland.
Tony Cascarino, England have such a tough group, really. Croatia, the defeated finalists in the World Cup in 2018. Scotland, who would love the opportunity to put one over in England, and the Czech Republic as well. And are England going to be damned yet again by the sense of domestic expectation putting pressure on the team?
Well, I did think, Matt, I thought it was very strange. I know they had players that coming back from the Champions League final to play for England that he chose not to use. I thought it was very strange that he didn't play as many, even if they got 45 minutes, Matt, a strong 11 against Romania. I thought it was a strange thing for Gareth to do. And also the formation is going to come into question. He played a flat back four against Romania. Will he go for a back five against Croatia? That is in itself is a really tough game, Matt. They've got 8 players over 50 caps in their squad that could, you know, and a large number of players that played. And you could say, yeah, they're older, but they're still a hell of a side. Their midfield is to die for, Matt. A lot of good players in there. Kovacic, Modric, Brozovic, who's at Milan. So I think it's a really big ask for England. I was more confident England could go further probably a month ago than I do feel about England now. Scotland will be very up for England and have got a much better team than Scotland have had in many a year. And like as the Czech Republic, it's a really tough group from Matt. I don't know if Gareth... Because, look, France and played in midweek and went incredibly strong in their lineup. Portugal did the same thing. England chose not to do that for reasons of Champions League players. But I still thought it was a strange thing to do, Matt.
Mark, you get the impression, though, that England still aren't sure of what their best team is.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. I think they play with 3 at the back, one of which would be what you would call a recognised fullback, which is could well be Walker in there. And of course, then you've got the thing of Kane plays up front. Who do you play in the positions alongside him or near him? Defensively, we say that is a real worry. But you know, sometimes you can by protecting players, you can actually go into this tournament and you're not quite at it, Matt. It's a bit like, you know, teams that get into the Champions League and they've got 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks before the Champions League and they leave players out all the time. And when you actually get there as a player, you're a little bit half-cooked. Yes, you're fit, but your touch just isn't there because you've not been playing regularly. So I think Liverpool are in that little kind of mix. Sorry, England are in that mix. at the moment, Liverpool, crikey.
But Miguel, it's an interesting point as well when it comes to selections. Will Southgate stand by players like Sterling and Rashford, who perhaps didn't have the best conclusions to the season, or would he be brave enough to drop them?
Yeah, and it's something he said he would always go against because he felt he had undercut England teams in the past. And now suddenly we're in the situation where, I mean, first of all, it was the selection of Henderson and Maguire in the first place. Now, we interviewed Henderson on Tuesday, and he was adamant that he is fit.
There as Roy Keane has suggested, to keep the spirits up and to do a sing-song and play card games.
Yeah, and I mean, even in that interview, he went on, look, Roy can say what he wants because he gave me my debut and all that. But it did feel like it needled him because he kept going back to it and referencing it and talking about card tricks up his sleeve. Now, I suppose any player in that position is going to insist they're fit. The truth will be when they actually play or whether they actually play. But it does feel like there's a little bit of a kind of a knife-edge situation there for Southgate, in which whether he goes to the tried and trusted players with experience but with questions about their fitness, or goes to something new. It's not just players in terms of fitness for who's at an issue. There's also a few players off form, like Rashford and Sterling. You could argue they're almost essential to how England play because they offer the pace that really makes Kane roles work. He drops back and they run in behind. But both of those have been off form for some time.
So what does he do, Tony, do you reckon?
Well, it's sometimes, Matt, you're in a position as a manager, you've got to be really brave. You've got to go with your gut feeling. I mean, I find it even inconceivable that Grealish would be left out. I think that would be utter madness, Matt. He's a top player, playing really well. And yes, he had an injury at the end of the season. You've got Mount and you've got Foden. For me, them three, whatever way you want to put them, because they all can all play different positions in the forward line, and obviously Kane.
So put those three sort of behind Kane and then the two central holding midfielders. I think Jose Mourinho was suggesting put Calvin Phillips and Declan Rice together there.
Yeah, I think he's going to have to, Matt. He's going to have two ball winners in midfield. Their three, Croatia's three, are all great footballers. You've got to stop them playing. And I think that would be what I would certainly want to do, is get two midfielders. You don't need a bomber, Matt. You've got three lads in front of you. Grealish can be played behind Kane. You could even do Grealish on the left and do the same with Mount or Foden. You know, there is a luxury there of England's forward players. All of them are very agile, mobile and quick. So that is a big plus for England. So I think they need to protect their back four. I think two holders is an absolute certainty, Matt, because that's the area of the pitch. I mean, a lot of people have talked to me about the defence, and I get it with maybe the three at the back, or you know, the wing-backs pushed on, or a flat back four. For me, they're really missing. I don't believe that Henderson can be physically in a condition, Matt. He might get through one game, because adrenaline takes you a long way. But I don't believe over the course of the group phases, I think Henderson will struggle.
Mark, we heard Scotland best team in a long time, but Wales, surely Wales can't be as good as they were in 2016. Gareth Bale is a lot older, he's not as good, they don't have Coleman as manager. What tournament do you expect Wales to have?
I don't think they'll get through the group, Matt. I don't think they'll finish third. As you rightly say, Gareth Bale kind of flitted in and out of form at Tottenham. And that they just don't have the same quality. And also, of course, last time, that factor of, like, nobody really fancied them. They came from nowhere. They were arguably, in terms of the quality that they had in their squad, they were arguably one of the teams of the tournament. I just don't see it this time at all. I think as well, we know the story about Giggs, obviously with him, and Robert Page has taken over. I just don't see Wales coming through. I think this is a tournament too far for them.
Okay. In a word, I'm going to ask each of you for a prediction as who's going to win. Mark, your winner?
France.
Tony, your winner?
Boring, France.
And Miguel, your winner?
I was going to say France as well.
That's okay. I mean, in fairness, I think the vast majority of people are going with France, but it will be fascinating to see if anyone can manage to put one over on them, given the galaxy of brilliant players that they have available to them. We look forward to chatting to you throughout the tournament. Tony Cascarino, Mark Lawrence and Miguel Delaney, chief football writer with The Independent. Thank you very much for joining us here on The Last Word at Today FM.